Hey, welcome to our podcast on the Art of Relationships. We're your hosts.
I'm Tim Mielhoff.
And I'm Chris Grace, and we're with the Biola University Center for Marriage and Relationships. So we're here to talk about all things relationships.
Well, Chris, I think it'd be great to continue a conversation we did last podcast. And the conversation simply is a lot of people want to get married. Mm-hmm. And not just get married, but want to have a thriving marriage. But what criteria do you use to commit the next 50, 60, 70 years of your life? We're surprised how many students or singles don't have a robust definition of what love is or even a criteria by which to consider it. So last podcast, we offered some criteria. The first one was marital love must be grounded in friendship. The second one was that the ultimate expression of love is unselfishness. And the third one was that sexual desire is natural, but when practiced before marriage, it hinders the ability to evaluate a relationship. And we had a great conversation about all three of those. We've gotten some great listener responses to those, some great questions, and maybe we can tackle some of those during this podcast. But hey, there's more observations. It's not just limited to those three. Let me throw out another one and get your thoughts on it. Not all love is permanent, but marital love requires a lifelong commitment. In other words, the first time you fall in love, high school or maybe college or a work type setting, we're not saying that every love must last a lifetime, right? All of us fall in and out of love before we make that ultimate commitment to step into a marriage. So we're saying that marital love, that when it solidifies, results in a lifelong commitment. So another observation I want to get your opinion on, Chris, is the observation that not all love is permanent, mm-hmm. but marital love requires a lifetime commitment. In other words, we want to allow for people to fall in love while they're in high school and not diminish that, to say, hey, I fell in love in college or at work, but it didn't last. That's okay. Love fades in and fades out sometimes. But when you make that commitment, mm-hmm. right, when you stand at the altar before God, your best friends, her mm-hmm. parents, your parents, whatever, mm-hmm. you are making a lifetime commitment to that person. And as we mentioned in the last podcast, we're seeing that in our culture today, which has been known as the divorce culture, mm-hmm. that a lot of people are not making these lifetime commitments to each other. There's mm-hmm. kind of a wait and see mm-hmm. attitude when it comes to lifetime commitment.
Right. Yeah, and I think what ends up happening is people fear, they don't really understand oftentimes that word, or they fear it, or there's some part of them that is unable to do this. They're right. They're just not ready, or they don't feel like, because I think maybe some of them accurately realize, wow, this is going to involve a whole lot of changes in me. This is going to hold a lot of time. I am going to have to give everything to this person. Am I willing to do that? And there's some doubts. And don't all relationships have an element of doubt to that? You don't always know if this is going to be the one that God has designed for us and the perfect person for you. But that's what part of a commitment does. It says, that's right. I am willing and ready to make this step, but it can be hard for couples.
And we're even willing to say to an individual who might say, listen, I think I'm in love. I think I love this person. I'm just not ready to get married. And we would say, hey, great. Now's not the time. Don't force it. Yeah. Right? But people think, no, I'm in love, and that's the only sign I need mm-hmm. that for me to jump into a lifetime commitment. And we're saying, no, there's so much more to consider than just whether you're in love or not. My students got mad at me when I was doing my PhD work at UNC Chapel Hill. They got angry at me because I made this statement. Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt had just gotten married. And I said to them in my class, about 50 students, I said, okay, I'm going to take a bet right now. Here's the bet. They won't last 5 years. They'll get a divorce within 5 years. And they're like, you're so anti-Brad Pitt. You're anti-Jennifer Aniston. Why would you say such a thing? And here's why I said it, Chris. I read a Rolling Stone interview in which Brad Pitt was asked the question, what do you think about this whole till death do us part stuff? Mm-hmm. You know what his answer was? He said, yeah, Jennifer and I really aren't into that. We're just going to kind of see where this takes us. Mm-hmm. Right? With that kind of an attitude, that is not going to make it past all the challenges that come with marriage, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So this lifetime commitment thing is very important. The book of Genesis talks about this. In one of the oldest pieces of poetry in known literature, the writer says that this is what marriage is. For this cause, a man shall leave his father and mother, shall cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Two interesting words there. One, they will cleave to each other, right? They leave their parents. I'm cutting the financial umbilical cord We can be on our own. We're going to leave, and now we're cleaving to each other. In the Hebrew, that word cleave means all of you is being stuck mm-hmm. together, and mm-hmm. you literally, the second word, you become one flesh with mm-hmm. each other. Mm-hmm. Now, can you rip that one flesh apart? Yes, but there's going to be damage to both people. So the Bible is saying this one flesh mentality carries you the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's the commitment that's implied there, that this is what you are getting. You are now one with another person, and that's it. And so this commitment, you know, what's the word they use now? A lot of people are saying they're taking this trial run, or it's a marriage, you know, that's just a practice marriage.
It's called a starter marriage.
And they call them a starter marriage. That's right.
Just like a starter house, you buy your first house and with the assumption that we're probably going to move on. And so people say, hey, this first marriage is most likely going to be a starter marriage. I don't know if it's going to work. I want it to work, but I wouldn't be shocked if it didn't work. Mm-hmm. Hey, when I was at UNC Chapel Hill, I attended a lecture. This guy gave a lecture on marriage, and he said this. The only way marriage can work is if you have a back door to the marriage. In mm-hmm. other words, you have an escape exit, right? But love means that you know what my escape hatch is, but I choose never to use it, right? Yeah. So Noreen would know, my wife Noreen would know that this is the limit Tim has, and that if we cross that limit, he most likely is going to exit the marriage, but he's chosen never to do it. Mm-hmm. He said, this lecturer, that's the only way marriage can work today. And I think the Bible takes a dramatically different approach when it says no. You will never experience the fullness God has for marriage if you have an exit strategy.
Mm. You know, what I worry about, Tim, are some of the trends we see out there. And when they're let's just take even that group called the millennials, right? They kind of support this form of marriage, that it's easy to split up, that it's not necessarily something that they want, or better yet, they just simply, when we compare them to like Gen Xers and baby boomers, they are among those who say, I am most likely to want to try this starter marriage. And because they just simply have a lot of people out there who are telling them this is an easier way to do it, because it'll save you all of the pain and all of the problems that come that other people are experiencing in the area when a divorce happens or when a relationship goes sour. And you could see there, it's almost like based on fear or based on an accurate perception of what's about to happen.
And again, the fear part is natural. It ought to stop you dead in your tracks when you realize what you're doing. Yeah. I am committing to a three-legged race for the rest of my life. Everywhere I go, I'm now either going to be dragging a person, right? But that person's going to affect me the rest of my life. We were at another lecture, me and a good friend of mine, who had been dating a woman for a long time. He was later in life. I think he was like in his early 40s, but hadn't pulled the trigger yet to get married. Mm-hmm. So we literally listened to this lecturer, Chris, and the guy is getting into a limousine and is leaving. Mm-hmm. And my friend shouts out to him, hey, how do I know if I should commit to this woman? And the guy literally says, as he's getting into his limo, I'll never forget this, he said this, answer one question. Do you want to eat breakfast with her for the rest of your life? I thought that was brilliant, the dailiness of it. So here are some questions that listeners might want to ask as they're thinking about, hey, can I commit to this person the rest of my life? Here are the questions. Are you willing to put a lifetime of effort into this one relationship?
Yep.
Another question, are you ready to leave the financial and emotional security of your family to start your own family?
Yeah, and you could even say that same kind of, the similar question would be, are you going to stick with this person in good times and bad times, right? That is easy to think, of course, I love this person and all the bad times, but you really need to consider what that means to stick with this person. And when that bad time does hit, right? You've said this question before. What will remind you of the rightness of your decision to come to be one flesh with this person? Well, what are those things that you write down and that you remember and that you ponder that you reminded you to get into this and that why you want to stick with this person?
And that brings up the old, remember that old joke about Barbara Bush when, I mean, she spent a lifetime with President Bush and somebody said, hey, did you ever think about divorce? She goes, no, murder, yes, divorce, no. But there's something powerful about that, right?
That's right. Yep.
Okay, so obviously some forms of love can come and go. That's mm-hmm. fine. But when you're going to make that commitment, mm-hmm. are you willing to make a lifetime commitment? Here's another thing to think about. And again, the Center for Marriage and Relationships, we come from a distinctly Christian perspective. Right. We blend the timeless truths of Scripture with current research. So the last another observation is inherently based on your relationship with God, and that is divine love is the key to human love. Mm-hmm. So when I talk to my students and I say, okay, what do you want from a person? They'll say things like this. I want a person who always cares for me, always looks out for me, always accepts me, always pursues me, always is interested in me. Underline the word always. Mm. And I say to them, boy, good luck.
Yep.
That's hard. Yep. Right? You're expecting so much of this person who's bringing his or her baggage into the marriage. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happening, Chris, is we're confusing divine love with human love.
Yeah.
God is a lover. He is love, John would say. So we've been hardwired for perfect love. And if we look to a human being to provide perfect love, mm-hmm. then we're always going to be inherently disappointed with what that person can give us.
Yep. Yeah, and because in essence, what a person who says, I want someone who's always looking out for me, always caring for me. Well, guess what? That's what God does. Yeah. That's our relationship with him, who always cares, always looks out, and always there. And if we try and substitute that in for somebody else, we are always going to be disappointed because somebody can't reach that. They can't fit that.
There's no way.
And
I can for years at a time, but even I get, I have a bad week.
Yes.
And
we'll bring Noreen on next week and talk about that very thing.
No, we will not. So you and I are both fans of C.S. Lewis. Lewis got married late in his life and afterwards reflected on love. And he makes a great point. This is what he says. Human beings can't make one another really happy for long. Yeah. You cannot love a fellow creature fully till you love God.
Yeah.
Boy, that's good.
Yeah, because if so, what that means is it allows us to get past these kind of mood swings that we go through. It allows us to understand that he has, as a transcendent love, allowed something there. And when we know that, then it allows us to love somebody else who is loved by God in all times and all things. We think, good Lord, how do I do this? This is so hard. And we have that model. So yeah, that's right.
That's right. And we're interesting study done by the University of London that said, is it possible that romantic sitcoms or romantic romance movies, think of any movie with Jennifer Aniston or Tom Hanks or Jennifer Lopez or Julia Roberts, right? Is that spoiling our view of love? And the University of London said, I think it is. It makes us think love can do things that it just simply can't overcome any difference.
Yeah.
Fulfill me in a way that completes me as a person. Mm-hmm. And I think we've been sold a bill of goods from pop culture to think that any human being can scratch the itch of divine love that God has placed in the human heart.
Yeah, boy, doesn't that argue about what you put in is going to have an influence on you? That is, if you start allowing some of these models to come in by just simply watching, different great movies. They're fun. They're entertaining. We go and see them all the time. But to watch them in a certain way without having a critical eye, especially at a vulnerable time, kind of leads you to a view of love that, like you said, is just not simple. It's not sustainable. It can't be done. And so we can get a lot of confused people coming in talking to us about, oh, this idealized view of romantic love is going to be awesome. And so they either err on one side going, it can do all things and it'll meet all of my needs and this person completes me. When in reality, we realize, oh man, there's a whole lot more to this. And if you simply believe this love, this person makes me complete. Well, you're already starting off on some very dangerous ground there.
It just drives you crazy. I show clips from The Notebook in my class. My students know how much I rail on The Notebook. Here you have two people. They're in a thunderstorm. First, can I just say, in 25 years of marriage, I've never had an argument standing in a thunderstorm. I think I would say to Noreen, I love you. Can we please go inside? I'm soaking wet right now. This passion, right, where they're yelling at each other, they're angry with each other, then suddenly they're embracing and kissing.
Yeah.
Boy, that is just not reality, right? I mean, Noreen and I can be upset at each other, right? And I still can kind of want to initiate sex. And Noreen looks at me like, have you lost your mind? And I'm like, I was just kidding. Is that a no? You know what I mean? Kind of a thing. So here are some questions to ask that I think are important when we're thinking about the balance of divine and human love.
Right.
Questions would be, how strong is my relationship with God right now?
Yeah.
If a person doesn't have a strong relationship with God, then how in the world are they ready to get married? Because the weaker the relationship with God, the more I'm going to expect from my boyfriend or girlfriend. How do I know to consistently love my boyfriend or girlfriend with God's love?
Yeah, that's an important question, because what you're doing is, are we expecting them, right, or asking them to love you or to love us in ways that only God can do it?
That's right.
And that's the gist of this is, wait a minute, I might be expecting just simply too much because there's only one person who can love me this way.
That's right.
And that's a great question.
And the last question is, am I expecting my girlfriend or boyfriend to love me in ways that only God can? I think that's really important. Boy, this is a nice segue to our last one.
Mm-hmm.
And our last one, I think, is maybe the most important one based on what we just said. Right. What's your spiritual compatibility like?
Yeah.
Now, let's be very clear what we're saying with this one and what we're not saying. I'm not saying that two individuals need to have the same knowledge of the Bible as each other. I'm not saying that they both could get an A+ on a Bible quiz of the Old Testament and the New Testament. I'm not saying that at all. But what they must have is the same spiritual interest.
Mm-hmm.
Right? One might have been a Christian much longer than the other, thus know far more than the other person. But we're saying they must have the same level of interest, because you don't want to have to drag that person along, remember that three-legged race?
Right.
You don't want to have to drag that person to church. You don't want to have to, hey, honey, let's read the Bible. Okay. Right? You want a person who just knows that this person is interested in God, and you don't have to always be the person pushing that person towards that interest.
Yeah, I think you have to start asking questions when it comes to this about, like you mentioned, the levels of interest. Also this, are your hearts aligned in key areas?
Yeah.
Do you have the same passion and interest, for example, for the poor, or for maybe you want to go overseas or you want to work in a ministry type thing, or you want to work in a church, or you want to be in a business, but you want to use that business to God's glory? Well, those levels of interest need to be compatible. Otherwise, you're going to be fighting about things that are central and key. How do we worship? Where do we worship?
Yeah.
Ways in which I find God. Where do you experience God? I mean, you want to ask the question, if you seek God and find him most when you're worshiping and having time of prayer, and the person you're with is like, oh, I just worship music and times like that drive me crazy. I find God when I'm alone in nature. Well, guess what? There's some incompatibility there at one level that needs to be talked about.
And the key is not where do you find God. We would allow for a ton of differences, but do you want to find God?
Do you want him? That's right.
And here's what I would say to our listeners, Chris. Let me talk to the women first. Ladies, it is irrelevant what he says. Ignore everything that man says. If he's a Christian, what do you want him to say? If you say to him, honey, how important is the Bible? What do you want this poor Christian guy to say? He's not going to say, well, I'll be honest with you, I don't even know where my Bible is right now. No, what's he going to say? He's going to say, no, the Bible is incredibly important. It is God's word. Hey, what do you think about going to church? Oh, of course. Church is incredible. The bringing together of believers, of course it's important. Forget all of that.
Yep.
It is completely 100% irrelevant.
Yep.
All you need to do is ask this question. What does he do?
Yep. Watch his life.
Watch his life. And by the way, this is obviously applies to the men with the women,
that's right.
It is irrelevant what they say. Just look at that person's life.
Yep.
Do you always got to push him a little bit, push her a little bit, or do you have a self-starter? Man, you want a person who is a self-starter in that marriage, that their walk with God's going to continue even if our relationship splits up.
Yeah, it's a lot of ways we discern other people, right? I mean, we can discern people by the way they answer questions or the way they might say something or what they believe. But in reality, one of the best gauges we have, and that's what you're alluding to, is this fact that your behavior is going to show me everything I need. And so one thing for couples to be able to do is to be able to watch that and realize, if nothing changed today—
That's good.
If nothing changed and I see their behavior, am I willing to accept that and live with that? Because that's about what you're going to get. There's not going to be a magic switch. It's going to happen the day you say, I do. And all of a sudden, this person starts walking with Jesus and having prayer time with you. Instead, you need to see what they're doing now. And that's the way to determine what you're going to get.
We close every premarital, when we're done with premarital and the couple's ready to get married, We say this to the couple. It's our very, very, very last question. And the question is this. If that person never improved or got worse, would you be okay with how she or he is the rest of his or her life?
Right.
Never improved, never got worse. You should see some of the reactions, Chris, we've actually gotten. People are like, no. Okay, then you're not ready to get married. Because hopefully they're going to change, but you can't bank on them changing.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, and there's a theological component to this as we wrap up this last thing that we're considering, this spiritual compatibility. I think there needs to be a theological compatibility. You and I have talked about this. Some of our listeners may know the phrases egalitarianism and complementarianism. Egalitarianism basically believes that there's no established leader, right? We mutually submit to each other. We mutually love each other. But it's not that you're the spiritual head of the marriage more than I am. It's equal. Complementarians believe that, yes, there's mutual love, mutual submission, but a woman submits to the man in a way that's distinctly different, right? He is her spiritual authority within the marriage. Now, maybe we'll do a podcast on this one day. It's kind of above our pay grade, so I think we'll bring somebody in. But whether you're an egalitarian or a complementarian to me is irrelevant, but you both need to be the same. You both need to be a complementarian or you both need to be an egalitarian. To mix it, in my estimation, can have disastrous results.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes in. I agree. And it's one of the biggest areas for couples to disagree on. Most of the time, couples can discern this without even knowing those titles, right? They just simply know that one of the ways that they want this marriage to be or their relationship functions this way. And again, that's a very important question to ask about when big decisions come in. How do we do this? And if it's a major decision or a minor decision. I remember a person I was talking to recently had been. He said that him and his wife, before they got married, made a decision and they agreed to this. All major decisions he would make, all the minor decisions she would make. And then he says, we've been married 48 years and we've yet to come up with a major decision. So what that means is, you know, it's a great marriage and they know that. And they know, hey, we're pretty equal in this. We like making decisions together. Well, that's the compatibility. And knowing that is critical for this, especially in the area of theology or spirituality, of where you land on this. And if it feels like you guys have had that conversation and can talk about it and there's compatibility there, whether you're egalitarian, complementarian, probably doesn't really matter.
Yeah, let me make a controversial statement. So listeners know, if you've been listening to our podcast, we teach a class on relationships. We co-teach it. There's a theologian and his wife. There's Dr. Grace and his wife, Elisa. There's me and my wife, Noreen. About 230 students. So we were just talking about this a little while ago, and a student asked a very interesting question. She said, well, what if I don't know? What if I don't know if I'm egalitarian or complementarian? So I want you to react on this, Chris. I said to her, then you're not ready to get married. Mm-hmm. If you don't know yet what you are, then you're not ready to get married. Because what happens if you develop a conviction later? Mm-hmm. I think this is the theological study that needs to precede making a lifetime commitment to each other. I think that's important to know. Hey, you don't need to know everything about it, but I think you need to know this is what I think the Bible is saying about male leadership or submission. And how you come out on it is up to you and the Lord and your study. But I think you need to know generally this is where I'm at.
Yeah, I guess I would say, I remember the response that I first thought of, and I thought, you know, in a relationship, when you're having these conversations with somebody, right, when this student is in a dating relationship and starts to get serious, I believe she'll start to know deep down some things that she might not be able to articulate now. They'll come out and she'll probably realize, especially if she doesn't like a particular view or perspective, or if she agrees with. And then I think that'll become a little bit clearer for her. But sometimes in relationship, these things come out and questions that we don't know to ask. And so there might be a little bit of uncertainty until she realizes the questions to ask. And those sometimes don't come out until you get a little bit more serious.
Hey, let's tackle a quick thing. We mentioned the last podcast that we'd get to. What if you're stuck?
Yeah.
We have good friends of ours, Ben and Janet. They actually speak with Family Life. So I'm kind of telling you the end of the story. But man, he couldn't pull the trigger.
Yeah.
He could not pull the trigger. He just didn't know he was stuck. Eventually, he got help, right? I think that's important is to get. So if you feel like you're stuck, I can't pull this trigger, I can't commit. then what would be some of the things we'd want to say to this person, Chris, to help him or her make a very significant life-altering decision?
Well, you know, you would point a person in that case to just spend some time, first of all, going through and spending time, you know, with God, asking the very question, Lord, what am I doing? In what ways can you, could this maybe lack of understanding, lack of commitment, or even doubt that's going on, is it something going on with me? Is there something between me and you and my relationship with you, and I'm not fully trusting you? Or is there something going on in this relationship with this other person that I really have some concerns, but I don't want to articulate them, or I don't want to bring them out? And knowing where that stands, is this something that's within you and between you and God, and you're not really ready to do this? Or is this something that's prompting you that you really are kind of dealing with at maybe even a subconscious level about the other person? And I think to kind of figure that out is very important. And just getting insight and talking to somebody else can be very helpful and realizing where the issue might lie when it comes to lack or not wanting to make this kind of commitment, for example.
Yeah, we offer, the Center for Marriage and Relationships offers conferences for pre-marrieds where I think you can get that information. But let me mention one thing. So I think there are yellow lights and there are red lights, okay? So to me, a yellow light is a personality difference, okay? You're a spender, she's a saver. You're kind of on the neat side, she's kind of on the more messy side. Okay, I think that's a yellow light. Again, you want to ask the question, hey, how am I going to feel always constantly asking her to kind of pick up or be more on time? That's a yellow light to me.
Yeah.
But to me, a character quality is
more
a red light.
Yeah, sure.
Like, I don't trust that this person is telling me the truth.
Right.
I mean, I ask him about this, I ask her about this, and I walk away feeling like, I think that person is spinning the truth.
Yeah, I think that's
a character issue.
It is. It's a character issue. And there's a lot of red lights like that, that if you can't trust them, or if you, for example, you're there's a form of jealousy that comes up every time, and because you just don't trust this other person, you know, with other people, and that could lie with you, that, you know, the cause of this, but it could also be with the other person. And those are characteristics that need to be talked about and decided. I think the last one that we talked about in here was that notion of being stuck also in a relationship in which the passion has overtaken you.
Yeah.
That is, you are sleeping together, having sex, and you simply can't break out of that. And you're not sure if the friendship and the relationship is developed enough. And so for couples that are dealing with that area, I think there's a couple of things to do. We would always recommend that they take a break, take time away from each other, and they simply commit to, maybe it's 6 months, maybe it's 2 months, and they're saying, we will not have sex together during this time. We are going to commit to our relationship, put this on pause. And if you can handle that, if you can do that, if you can make this commitment and stay free from that for this X amount of time until you feel God has prepared you and given you unclouded eyes to see.
That's good.
Then you are prepared to probably make a decision about whether or not this is the person I want to spend the rest of my life with. It'll be a much clearer, more accurate decision, again, depending upon how much time and how much commitment you can make to that.
So we do a version of this, but so let me understand what you're saying. So you would say this couple would actually be physically away from each other, would take a break from actually seeing each other on a daily basis.
Yeah, they would take a break initially, and then for sure, once they get back together, there would also be a protection over the sexual side.
Yes, I love that, because then you start to realize, hey, I don't know if I enjoy being around this person that much.
Oh,
I don't think this person is as funny. We have all of these conflicts, and they're not being resolved with us being in bed together, which is a pseudo form of resolving the conflict.
That's
I think, Chris, you're absolutely right.
Yep.
I think that's so important that if a couple is actively sleeping together, I don't have the confidence to say to them that they're ready to get married, because they're so clouded.
I don't think they're able to understand clearly whether or not and to accurately understand the foundational things that we talked about. Is there a commitment, a selflessness, a friendship? And those things can be misunderstood, misperceived, and misevaluated when there's too much physical intimacy that's clouding.
So that's all we have. But if you're thinking, no, I want this conversation to continue, well, we actually do continue it in many different ways. Go visit our website, right, Chris? Our website is?
Yeah, it's cmr.biola.edu. We have a number of different blogs on this topic.
That's right.
We have videos. You can see some different events that we put on and conversations that we're having about issues just like this.
That's great.
So, hey, we're just out of time for today, and we are so glad you joined us for this podcast. Man, this was fun, Tim. And we hope you guys had fun too. You learned a little and you laughed a lot. And so once again, just thanks for being with us. If you want to see more, as we mentioned, go to cmr.biola.edu. And we're just grateful to have you all here with us. So thanks again for being with us today. I'm Chris.
I'm Tim. And we'll see you next time on The Art of Relationships.